There are still things that profoundly upset me when I encounter them, whether it's on the web, or the word, or in the world. They never get easier, never stop my heart from trip-trapping, never let me escape, this time unscathed. But they teach me things, and they open my eyes. And if they hurt, they hurt in ways that make me think and grow and change.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. And today, we are going to go and embark on a painful journey, actually. I had a show planned out where I was going to go ahead and do some reviews and some items of news and such, and just kind of go along our merry way. But today, today is going to be a little rough. I'm recording this in a slightly different way, away from my microphone. But you know, I'm doing it because there's only one bit of news that really matters. Today is July 15th, 2015, but we received word on July 11th, 2015, we received word on the 12th, yeah, it was July 12th, 2015, that on July 11th, 2015, Satoru Iwata, who was the current president of Nintendo of America, as well as the Nintendo Corporate, the acting CEO, the acting president, died. He died from complications with a bile duct growth, which is a tumor. Now, tumors aren't necessarily cancer. Cancer is a type of tumor, but a tumor isn't necessarily a type of cancer. So, I just kind of want to clear that up because there's a lot of outlets that are reporting that he died of cancer. And that isn't true. That's wrong. At no point was Satoru Iwata undergoing chemotherapy or radiation, which is normally associated with treatments for cancer. Treatments for bile duct growths or actual tumors are, while they remove it, there are certain types of medications you can take, but generally you're not given chemotherapy or items like that. A tumor can be removed, and he'd had the surgery for that. We might never get all the full details of it, but he had had the surgery and was recovering from the surgery during the week of E3 2015. And it's the complications with that and after the surgery that ultimately led to him passing away. Now, for today's Radio DMG, I decided instead to go and dig through some of our archives. There was a Glorious Excess episode in which we had the entirety of the GDC speech that Satoru Iwata put out called The Heart of a Gamer. I see a lot of people quoting The Heart of a Gamer. I don't think a lot of people have actually listened to the entirety of that speech. It's nice to quote the first awkward moments of that speech because they are uniquely profound and uniquely Iwata and uniquely Nintendo, but they need the context of the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. So, for this episode, I'm going to dig into the archives, grab that audio, and then present it to you as well as I can in its entirety. I did clip out a little bit of the music that belongs to GDC, but I will present it in its entirety, and then we're going to cover other news and other items and press releases and things in some other episode. So please understand. Okay? So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to queue up the audio. And I'll see you on the other side of that audio. I guess maybe it's appropriate that we started the episode with that clip from Neil Gaiman. It's from his book Trigger Warning, in which he, in his introduction to it, criticizes the idea of these, of the warning, you're at your own risk if you read this type thing. Because I think Neil Gaiman understands, like many actually mature adults, that pain is part of growing up. The idea that we should remove pain, remove suffering, remove things that make us feel uncomfortable or sad from our lives, I believe this to be folly. I believe this to be the worst thing you can do. It's not. It's like, let me just say that the wine of comfort is detrimental to our own development. I think it's important for us to feel pain because human beings, that is how we learn. That is how we grow. That is how we evolve and mature. Without pain, without suffering, we cannot establish our own moral codes. We cannot establish our own ethics. If we shuffle ourselves into little safe spaces, we close ourselves off from millions of experiences, hundreds of millions of experiences, billions, trillions. You see, sometimes reaching out into that cold, reaching out into that void, into that darkness, is the only way to reach new light. You know, I'm going to paraphrase a movie that I saw recently, actually, called Nightcrawler, where the character Jake Gyllenhaal is playing goes, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy the ticket. That's, his character's psychotic, but he's got a point. You see, even more simple, I guess we could look at Finding Nemo, where it's like, he's saying, I don't want anything to happen to my kid. And then Dory's character looks at Marlin and says, well, if you keep him away from, if you prevent anything from happening to him, nothing's going to happen to him. And nothing's going to happen to us if we bottle ourselves up into little safe spaces, or we try and force people to be kind to us. That's not how humanity works. That's not how nature works. We learn by doing, by experiencing, and we have to know that many of those experiences will be painful and unpleasant. Many of them will dredge up things we thought about ourselves that we need to question. And that is with me, what I'm going to go ahead and do for you. Going to go ahead and cue up that audio, and I want you to really pay attention to it. There is a little bit of corporate speak in that speech, but it's important. You need to read between the lines on this. You need to look a little bit deeper into what is being said by Satoru Iwata, what he feels our industry should be. A little bit into the heart of, essentially, his ideas for Nintendo, the heart of his industry, the heart of Iwata, the heart of a gamer.
Gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Director of the Game Developers Conference, Jamil Moladina.
Good morning. Many of you will have a lot in common with our next speaker, as he started out as a game developer himself. If you've played any of the Kirby, Earthbound, or Smash Brothers games, you've already met his inner self. Yet his vision of the future propelled him up the chain of command, landing him at the highest level of the video game industry. We are also particularly appreciative that he will be delivering his keynote in English and with a sore throat. Please join me in welcoming the top man at Nintendo Worldwide, President Satoru Iwata.
Thank you very much, Jamil. On my business card, I am a corporate president. In my mind, I am a game developer. But in my heart, I am a gamer. Today, I'd like to speak to you from my heart about our jobs and about our industry. I remember the first video game I ever played. It was Pong, and I loved it. By the time I was in high school, I was the first person in my class to buy an early Hewlett-Packard pocket calculator. I think I was one of the original early adopters. But where most people use their calculators for higher mathematics, I use mine to program video games. My first creation was a baseball game. I don't think anyone can say it has bad graphics because it has no graphics. Gameplay was represented only by numbers. But when I saw my friends playing that game and having fun, it made me feel proud. To me, this was a source of energy and passion. As that passion for games began to blossom, I think my life course was set. In 1978, I entered the Tokyo Institute of Technology. I would have loved to study video game programming, but no one was teaching it then. So I went to classes on engineering and early computer science. But after class, when my friends went back to their rooms to study, I took off on my motorcycle for one retail store in Tokyo. This was the first store to have the department entirely dedicated to personal computers. That was my hangout, and I was not alone. There were others there who also looked at those early computers and thought the same thing I did. How could we play games on them? We became friends, formed a club, and soon rented an apartment in the Akihabara district of Tokyo, where we began designing our own games. We worked until midnight or later every night, and that group of friends is what became the company known today as HAL. The name came from the computer in the movie 2001 Space Odyssey, HAL. We thought that name was very cool. Also, this is what I looked like back then. Thank you. Like all game creators, I was extremely cool too, don't you think? So, I don't really remember how, but I managed to keep up with my classwork and graduated from the institute. But when it came time to take a job, I had the distinction of joining the smallest company of any graduate in my class. I left to become only the fifth full-time employee of HAL. And when I told my father this, you can imagine, it was not the happiest moment in the history of my family. People sometimes ask me what I did when I was hired at HAL. Well, the answer is that I was a programmer and an engineer and a designer, and I marketed our games. I also ordered a lot of takeout food, and I helped clean up, and it was all great fun. Perhaps the biggest moment in the history of HAL came when we heard a rumor that Nintendo was developing a machine capable of incredible new graphics, the Famicom, or NES as it was called here in the States. We knew that this machine was for us, so we used every contact we could to get a meeting with Nintendo, sure that one of our ideas would become an instant hit. Yes, Nintendo did hire us, but not to amaze the world with one of our projects. Instead, they told us to fix one of their projects, a game that had seriously fallen behind schedule. Instead of creating a game, we repaired a game, and it eventually was released as NES Pinball. That experience taught us that even artists must know the business side of game development. After all, if a game never comes to market, there is very little chance of it making any money. Working in those days was also instructive in another way. Because the graphics were so primitive by today's standards, we asked ourselves how we could spur the player's imaginations as a substitute for what we couldn't display on the screen. Think about this. Someday our games won't look any better. What will we do then? Well, our work was satisfactory enough that we formed a close association with Nintendo. And as Hal invented a couple of early franchises, we also learn other lessons. Our first Kirby game taught us the value of teamwork. Since not everyone can be a Miyamoto, we discovered that idea can come from several team members building on each other to make something superior to what one person could invent. Then we worked with the famous Japanese creator, Shigesato Itoi, who was already an avid gamer himself, to develop his first idea for a game. That series, called Mother in Japan, and released here in America as Earthbound, proved to us that ideas take on a special appeal when they become interactive. Many years and many projects later, I went to work for Nintendo full-time, and then one day, about 3 years ago, Mr. Yamauchi appointed me to succeed him as company president. Of course, this was a great honor, but it was also a great challenge. I knew this would require committing much more time and assuming much more responsibility. But fortunately, game developers are familiar with such things. So, I'd like to move on this morning and answer two questions that I'm often asked. Now that I've had 2 decades of experience in the video game world, First, over the last 20 years as a developer, what things have changed? And second, what things have stayed the same? One thing that has not changed and will not change is our nature as a form of entertainment. Like any other entertainment medium, we must create an emotional response in order to succeed. Laughter, fear, joy, anger, affection, surprise, and most of all, pride of accomplishment. In the end, triggering these feelings from our players is a true judgment of our work. This is the bottom line measurement of success. Secondly, we must always weigh challenge and reward. How much work and frustration a player is willing to withstand depends on the personality and skill of the player. Core gamers have a huge appetite for challenge. Casual gamers want less difficulty. At Nintendo, we believe it is our responsibility to make games for all skill levels. And most definitely, that includes people who are not playing our games now. The third thing that has not changed is the importance of the idea. Of course, it is valuable to devise and extension or offshoot of a current idea, but it is invaluable to come up with a brand new idea of what a game can be. I'm sure there are a few of you out there in the audience today with such creativity, and our industry needs you. Fourth, this truth never changes. Software sells hardware. People buy game systems to play the game they love. I agree with Steve Jobs, the head of Apple, when he said, software is the user experience. Software is the driving technology, not just of computers, but of all consumer electronics. Finally, what has not changed is the value of intellectual property. If it is true that software sells hardware, it is more true than ever that franchises sell software. While our industry has made hit games with names like Spider-Man and James Bond and NFL football, I think we should be proud that our best games are those whose hero and worlds we invented ourselves. Thank you. So then, on the other side of the coin, what do I think of when I consider what has changed? One word immediately comes to mind: bigger. Especially here in the Western Hemisphere, the business is bigger. The North American and European retail markets alone are now worth approximately $17 billion. In the US, game sales were up another 8% last year. There are games in your living room, your office, on your PDA, your cell phone, and of course, best of all, on your Nintendo DS. Many in the media are shocked to learn that young men now spend more time playing games than watching TV. I think those of us in this room could have told them that a long time ago. Of course, the games themselves have become much bigger in several ways. They are bigger in a technical sense, occupying more digital space. That, in turn, requires bigger teams, bigger budgets, and bigger challenges in meeting deadlines. This also means that big game companies are getting bigger by consuming smaller ones. We know that in the next generation, budgets for AAA console games will regularly move into 8 digits, and that's before any marketing money is spent. Only the biggest companies can afford such cost. Not surprisingly, the success of our industry and the profit margin for hit games has again drawn big interest from larger entertainment companies. But we may not be compatible. There are books, movies, and TV shows are exactly the same for every user. But our games let players help write their own screenplays and their own endings. Now, I don't think any of this is news: bigger budget, bigger staffs, bigger companies. It's there for all of us to see. Big is obvious. On the other hand, what's more prominent in my thinking these days is how our industry is getting smaller. We are smaller in the amount of risk we are willing to accept. We are also smaller in how we define video games. The list of genres seems fixed: shooters, sports, platform, puzzles, and so on. When is the last time we invented a new genre? But as importantly, even within these genres, we have reduced the environments we use. The racing tracks, the soundtracks, the bosses, the heroes are starting to look more and more alike. Consider Tiger Woods Golf and Mario Golf, each a successful franchise, but using two different looks for the same genre. Such variety is becoming harder and harder to find. We are even getting smaller in how we define progress. Making games look more photorealistic is not the only means of improving the game experience. I know on this point I risk being misunderstood. So remember, I am a man who once programmed a baseball game with no baseball players. If anyone appreciates graphics, it's me. But my point is that this is just one path to improve games. We need to find other improvement has more than one definition. And finally, I am most concerned with what we think as a gamer. As we spend more time and money chasing exactly the same players, who are leaving behind? Are we creating games just for each other? Do you have friends and family members who do not play video games? Well, why don't they? And I would ask this. How often have you challenged yourself to create a game that you might not play? I think these questions form an important challenge for all of us. Excuse me. So, I have preached more than enough about the state of our industry. You may be wondering, how does Nintendo plan to respond? Let me answer a couple of things in a straightforward way. First, has Nintendo turned its back on the hardcore gamer? I don't believe so. If we were not interested in core gamers, we would not have packed in Metroid Prime Hunters for each of you when you went out and bought your Nintendo DS. This is not just excellent game entertainment, but also a signal that we want the DS to be for core gamers too. We would not have partnered with Nspace in order to take a new look at shooters in the game Geist, which is coming exclusively to Nintendo GameCube. It will move your emotions and move your definition of this genre. And if we are not interested in core gamers, GameCube would not be the home to the first big hit of 2005 here in America, Capcom's Resident Evil 4. It's a sign that not only do we care about core gamers, but core gamers care about Nintendo. And most of all, we would not be finishing the most anticipated game in your industry this year, a brand new Legend of Zelda. I would love to tell you all about it, but actions speak louder than words. We have chosen you to see the first new footage of Zelda since E3 10 months ago, so take a look. A new look is only one part of the Zelda story. Much more of the mystery will be revealed at E3. This latest Zelda adventure will appeal to core gamers and all gamers, just like every previous version. The reason, I believe, is that it meets the standards we set for all software we develop. We call these standards the four I's. First, is it truly innovative? Something different from what has come before? Second, is it intuitive? Does control of the game and the direction of gameplay seem natural? Third, is it inviting? Do you want to spend time in this world? And finally, how does it measure up in terms of interface? Can the player connect in new ways? Certainly, few games can score perfectly in each of these areas. But at Nintendo, this is how we measure ourselves and why we apply these standards to our software projects. There is also an obvious hardware example, Nintendo DS. It was designed to demonstrate both innovation and new forms of interface to be both intuitive and inviting. So far, people seem to have decided that it does all of that. As of today, we have shipped 4 million DS systems to Japan and North America in just 16 weeks since launch. And those numbers do not include Europe, where Nintendo DS begins selling tomorrow. I know that you are all familiar with the novel aspect of DS gameplay, incorporating to the two screens, the touch screen, and the microphone. What you may not have much knowledge of yet is wireless gameplay. We are now finishing up a game, Mario Kart, that will allow 8 players to compete simultaneously. Yes, gamers already know that Mario Kart is fun. But does the DS version make it even more fun? Well, let's find out. Let me ask you this. Is there anyone out there who is celebrating a birthday today? If so, please stand up. Okay. Please come up here to the stage. And in fact, if your birthday is any day this week, please stand up. I will need 6 of you to come up here and join me. Come on, don't be shy. Bill Trinian from Nintendo of America is also going to join us. And we will form a test group for wireless Mario Kart on Nintendo DS.
Let's go ahead and spread out a little bit on stage so that you guys are happy with the results of the race, you know, getting through the fight here.
Okay? On the screen above us, you see Will Bill's car. I hope trailing mine, right, Bill? Thank you for joining. Oh, Okay, let's start. I'm Mario. I'm not a good player. No! Yeah, unfortunately, I'm very bad. Final round. Congratulations.
Thank you. That was fun.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. These days, I spend so much of my time on meetings and interviews and traveling. I sometimes forget how much fun have playing games. I like that. Well, this demonstration of Virus Mario Kart brings us up to the present moment. This is a product that we will bring to the market later this year. But I would like to spend the rest of my time today on what is perhaps the next logical question. Where does Nintendo go from here? Let me try to explain it first with an image. In the universe of interactive entertainment, there is a planet we call video game. It is the one we know best, but it is only one. Also, in our universe are other planets which entertain, but in different ways from current games. It is this part of the universe we are anxious to explore. So, this idea creates the dual passions of Nintendo. On one hand, we work every day to make what we describe as video games better. We want to give players what they want. But at the same time, we are intent on finding out what else we can use to entertain. Our second goal is to show players something new, something they may not even know they want. You already are familiar with a good example of this philosophy. It's Pokemon. At its core, Pokemon is a wonderful role-playing game, but it is also much more. Players collect and trade Pokemon maybe the same way you once collected and traded bottle caps or baseball cards. Pokemon expanded RPGs to places they hadn't gone before. Another example was our decision to put PictoChat into the DS. It's not a game, not a competition, but a way for us to better understand how communicating wirelessly might also entertain. And PictoChat as a wireless function also represents just the latest step in something much larger for Nintendo. Excuse me. I want to announce today that following the groundbreaking work we have always done in connecting players, we will aggressively pursue Wi-Fi connections, beginning with Nintendo DS. The original Game Boy connected two players with a cable, then four players on Game Boy Advance. We put four control ports on your consoles, and then made our controllers wireless. With Pokemon, Fire Red and Leaf Green, we packaged wireless adapters with the games. That introduced unfamiliar players over fairly large distances. This is all part of a unifying philosophy that continues with Nintendo DS. Every aspect of Nintendo DS is designed to be friendly to all audiences. Therefore, Wi-Fi should be easy for everyone too. Our goal is to make this process simple and seamless. Users shouldn't give a thought. Wi-Fi connections will feel like a local area network connections because they will use a common API. We will let DS owners enjoy Wi-Fi without the difficulty of entering an SSID or a web key. And maybe, most importantly, we will remove the most important consumer barrier because Nintendo's Wi-Fi connection will be free. As I said, thank you. As I said, simple and seamless. So you may want to know, is this infrastructure ready to go? Almost. What about development? Where are the dev kits? By E3, you won't be asking that question. Well then, what about the entertainment? I can say today that you will be playing Wi-Fi games on DS this year. What we are developing internally and externally with a number of people is very exciting to me. At least one of these projects, I believe, will be groundbreaking. And we look forward to your Wi-Fi games too. Let me give you one example of what we are working on. Internally, we are developing Animal Crossing Wi-Fi. We chose this property for a couple of reasons. First, it is one of those non-game games I mentioned, a form of entertainment that really doesn't have a winner or even a real conclusion. And because of its unrestrained pace of action. It avoids wireless latency issues. Before, you could take Animal Crossing to a different village. Now, with Wi-Fi, you can take it around the world. So, we feel that our form of free and easy wireless play helps move our industry in a new direction. But we are making similar moves in software as well. I want again to bring Biltoinen out to demonstrate two other things that come from a different part of the interactive entertainment universe. But even before we show them, I can tell you, they may seem unusual because they are something different. This first one is the current passion of Mr. Miyamoto and Bill himself.
Ha ha!
And now Mr. Miyamoto is very busy to finishing up this game in Japan. As you see, this product will expand our audience to players who currently are not satisfied with what we've been offering them. I'm also going to ask Bill to show you one other software project. We are calling Electroplankton. That sounds different. Electroplankton. And it looks different too. The idea here is that creativity should not just belong to the developer, but to the player as well.
We make the two Mario themes.
designed to produce harmony of adrenaline. So far, we are seeing different kinds of reactions to electroplankton. Some test players are confused. They keep looking for their score or their next enemy. But others are hypnotized. There are people who simply refuse to turn the game off. No matter what your own reaction, I think you can agree that this is definitely not from the world we currently call video games. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill. So, this is Nintendo's plan. Make our existing game world much better. Better Zeldas, better Marios, better partnerships creating games like Resident Evil 4, but also exploring other worlds in interactive entertainment. For us, this is a passion. This is a mission of adventure. And most importantly, we want you, the creative heart for our entire industry, to take that journey with us. You may remember from E3 last year that we explained that DS had two meanings, dual screen and developer system. And Nintendo Revolution is a developer system too. With IBM, we are creating Revolution's core processor, which we have codenamed Broadway, because Broadway is the capital of live entertainment. With ATI, we are developing the graphic chipset codenamed Hollywood, because Hollywood is the capital of movie entertainment. With Revolution, we are determined to create the new capital of interactive entertainment. Now, a couple of specifics. First, contrary to much speculation, I can announce today that Revolution will be backward compatible. The best of the Nintendo GameCube library will still be enjoyed by players years from now. Second, as I said earlier, we intended to incorporate wireless technology in all we do. Therefore, Nintendo Revolution will be Wi-Fi enabled, built into every system. Thank you. And third, even though the game experience enjoyed by players will be far different on Revolution, developing for it will be familiar. It will not require a steep new learning curve. In this way, just like Nintendo DS, it's a place where the best idea, not the biggest budget, will win. And make no mistake, we expect third-party publishers will be fully supportive of what we are doing. From this point forward, in support of all of our product lines, Nintendo will be expanding our development reach. Some of these new games will come from larger internal teams. Some from the kinds of game partnerships we've formed with third parties over recent years. Maybe someday we'll work on a game together. I'd like that. If you don't mind, I will finish today with memories from one more franchise in my development career, Super Smash Brothers. At the time it was being developed for Nintendo GameCube, I was already working full-time for Nintendo. But my heart told me I was still a developer. So I assigned myself to HAL to rejoin the team finishing the game. Once again, I was living on the Japanese developer's diet of chips, pizza, and the rice balls, and walking through the night from their offices. It was possible to see Mount Fuji, which many say is most impressive if you are willing to wake up and see it at dawn. But during this period, just as years before with our Kirby games, we at HAL would see the sun shining on the mountain before we ever went to bed. Many say the sight of the first light on Mount Fuji inspires them. But for me, I hope I never see it again. I also remember the first version of Smash Brothers developed for Nintendo 64. The concept for the game, as you know, was to take the classic friendly Nintendo franchise characters and have them, as you say here in America, beat the heck out of each other. The idea was not brand new. There certainly have been a lot of fighting games. And the characters looked pretty much the same way they always had. So, when we brought the idea to Nintendo, the concept did not sound hip or cool or revolutionary. And because of all this, there were people both inside and outside Nintendo who did not strongly favor our idea. And this was the environment that our team worked under. That attitude remained until the moment of truth, the moment when testers began picking up the controllers and actually playing the game. This is what happened. People smiled, then laughed, then began shouting to each other. That was the moment when everything for Smash Brothers changed. And I must tell you, this was also one of the proudest moments in my development career. Yes, the Smash Brothers series has become a great worldwide success because it sold over 10 million copies worldwide. Thank you very much. But the memory of that first moment when the testers began to play stays with me always. That is that moment that I call success. We at HAL found a way to bring our idea to life. Our team believed deeply in the concept, and we did not waver in our approach. So, in this important sense, we at HAL, we are just like every one of you. Even if we come from different sides of the world, speak different languages, even if we eat too many chips or rice balls, even if we have different tastes in games, every one of us here today is identical in the most important way. Each one of us has the heart of the gamer. Thank you very much for your attention.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. And we will see you next week. with other content, and you're now caught up.